Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Elected in 2008 to replace the disgraced Mark Dan as Attorney General, Richard Cordray had just 2 years in office before the red tide wiped out Democratic leadership across the state. That term ends in a few weeks when Republican Mike DeWine takes over. Richard Cordray has joined us today to talk about his future politics and protocol and what's left undone as the Republicans take over state government in Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
You've been mentioned as a possible, if not likely, appointee to the Ohio Supreme Court to replace Maureen O'Connor. She just won election as Chief Justice for the court, and you've also been bandied about as a likely Democratic gubernatorial candidate in 2014 and probably many other things. So let's talk about your future for just a minute.
Well, I haven't really brought my future into focus yet, Ann. I had been hoping and expecting I would do 4 more years as Ohio's Attorney General. I've loved this job. I think we've done an excellent job, and I think most people who looked at it carefully would agree with that. But now I'm going to have to go in other directions, and those are a couple of things that have been mentioned. It all seems a little premature to me, and I certainly think that I need to recuperate from a long, hard, pretty exhausting campaign and get myself in a position to make good judgments about my future, which I don't think I was really suited to do last week and probably not quite this week yet either.
Recuperation, all of that makes complete sense that you want some time to think about things, but doesn't the governor have to make that appointment very quickly?
As I understand it from reading in the newspapers, not something I had focused on, the appointment would occur in the first week of January.
Right.
So that's quite a ways from now.
When after this sort of an experience, what are your expectations about how soon you start thinking about what's next?
Well, I'll be under the Ohio Constitution. I'll be Attorney General until January 10th, at which point Mike DeWine will take over the office. In the meantime, we will be working to put together a productive transition process, which I know is very important from having gone through two of them in the last 4 years, transitioning into the state treasurer's office in 2006-07. And then transitioning into the Attorney General's office in 2008-09. And I think if a lot of hard work is done over the next 2 months, that will smooth the path to having the office continue producing at a very high level, which I think it's doing now, and making sure that the right people get into place for the next Attorney General. That's something I'm focused on doing. I'm also focused on trying to look out for a lot of people who will be inevitably losing their jobs or changing their positions, who I think are very talented, who came to work for me and worked with me in that office, and I think deserve to have good opportunities going forward.
My guest is Attorney General Richard Cordray. If you'd like to speak with Attorney General Cordray, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of all the statewide Democratic candidates at the top of the hour, I called you the voted most likely to succeed but did not candidate. You were dubbed the most likely to hang on to your job, even in what was going to be another big GOP year. What went wrong?
Well, I think the biggest thing that went wrong is that turnout did not favor Democratic candidates. There were surprisingly 400,000 or more fewer votes cast statewide in 2010 than had been true in 2006. Nobody probably can explain that fully. But part of it undoubtedly was the very, very long campaign season. The early vote, which caused TV commercials to start much earlier, many of those had a very negative tone, and I think it turned a lot of people off to the process. By the end of it, they were tired of it, and they did not want to participate and go to the polls. I think that hurt us severely. Always when there's a low turnout statewide, it's better for Republicans, worse for Democrats. High turnout tends to be the reverse, and we had a very low turnout this year.
How much do you think, if you hadn't left the treasurer's office, if you had stayed there and put down deeper roots in that office, that you might have had a better chance that way than switching, even though, albeit you mentioned you loved this job as attorney general?
Well, it's interesting. I ended up with 2 years as treasurer, having to come in after the Tom Noe CoinGate scandals and clean up kind of a mess there, which we did. Then I came in, was elected to the attorney general's office in 2008. And interestingly enough, that turned out to be a fairly easy election, even though it was difficult circumstances, succeeding an officeholder from my party who had fallen short of the public's trust. And then I had work to do to clean up that office and get it back on track, which we did. It may be that in neither job did I end up having the chance to put down deep enough roots to withstand the kind of hurricane that hit Ohio for Democratic candidates. I don't really know how to speculate about that. Don't think it's worth much time and effort to speculate about it. What I do know is I had a chance to be treasurer for 2 years, and I think served the public well and cleaned up problems, and you haven't heard of any problems there since. And then it came to the Attorney General's office, cleaned up problems, and we operated at a very high level the last 2 years. And I'm proud of my team and our efforts in both cases. And I do not see this election as a reflection on that. I see it as larger forces that are always at work in these campaigns. And if you're in politics, you just have to recognize it's a hazardous profession. There's so much that you can control. There's a lot of things you can't control. And it's the combination of those that determines the outcome of elections.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation with Attorney General Richard Cordray. And Mohammed, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, man. Thank you for letting me talk to the Attorney General. And actually, my question is that what would he do different in the next any sort of campaign he's going to run next time? And what would he do different than what he did this time? Because I definitely thought that he's going to be the winner. But apparently that more ads you have seen for Mike DeWine than you have seen for Richard Cordray.
Okay. Well, I think, Mohammed, the first thing I'd like to do differently is I'd like to win rather than lose. That's always a basic in campaigns. It's more fun to win than lose, and then you have a chance to do the job, which, of course, to me is the real objective. We had lots of ads on TV. So did Mike DeWine. Both of us were well-funded, and so that was not the issue. I think that we had issues that went back and forth between us, and I think that none of those was decisive. On my side, you know, a positive was that I had strong support from every law enforcement organization in the state, which is an important factor in the Attorney General race. I also had support of all the major newspapers in the state, and I don't know what impact that makes anymore. But for some people that matters, for others it doesn't. And in the end, as I said, it was a turnout issue, a turnout problem, and obviously we need to be able to motivate voters better than we managed to do this year.
Thanks, Mohammed, for your call.
Thanks.
Callers, listeners, if you wanna give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And let's have some questions looking forward with Attorney General Cordray. What's next? What's next in the lame duck term that he has left? What do you do with that leftover time? And later on, we're going to talk about maybe what some other statewide officials might be doing with that time, given some of the pressures they face. Attorney General-elect Mike DeWine said that your policies were unfriendly to business interests in Ohio, that you didn't. The lawsuits you filed, the issues that you went after were undermining business interests. What's your response to that?
Well, that was said at times. It wasn't really substantiated much. There were a couple of different occasions where the very specific question was asked, what lawsuits has Attorney General Cordray brought that you would not have brought or that he should not have brought? And there never was any real answer to that. So, you know, it's you can characterize someone as business unfriendly, but there really isn't any substance to that here. In fact, I think that my policies were very friendly to the law-abiding businesses in the state. And for the predators, the scammers, the people who operate on the basis of a business model based on fraud, those are people the Attorney General needs to go after in order to clean up the business climate for all the law-abiding businesses of the state. I don't think the trade associations and the other groups that represent business in Ohio had any problem whatsoever with my tenure. I think they understood I was reasonable in terms of how I handled matters. I had an early warning system before suing Ohio businesses. We gave people a chance to work things out. It all centered on, are you complying with the law or not complying with the law? And if you're not, why are you not, and how do we bring you into compliance? And I think that people who were close to it and saw that recognized that I was a reasonable attorney general, aggressive when I needed to be, but every attorney general needs to be aggressive when they need to be to make sure that the laws are being enforced. And so I don't think that criticism amounted to much, nor do I think it was made very frequently with much volume on the other side.
The Columbus Dispatch reported this weekend that some consumer advocates fear that the momentum you built up to put a cap on the foreclosure problems in Ohio might end when you leave office, because it's not written into law. It was definitely a policy of your office to go after that stuff. Your efforts have been characterized as a full court press. What do you see as the possibility that might flag in your absence?
Well, I do think I was in a unique position on the foreclosure issue because I'd been working on foreclosure prevention and dealing with the fallout of that in our communities going all the way back to when I was Franklin County's treasurer, starting in about 2004, 2005. So, yes, I have been aggressive on the issue. I feel passionately about it. I think that the foreclosure issue continues to drag down the American economy. It affects our communities in many and deep ways, and I think it's something that has to be taken more seriously by the big banks nationally. But I don't agree necessarily that I think that Mike DeWine will let those issues flag. These are important issues facing our community. He's a longstanding public servant of great experience. He tends to be responsive to the needs of the community, and I think that he will see, as I have seen, that this is a major issue that requires some effort from the Ohio Attorney General. And frankly, right now it's getting effort from all 50 state attorneys general. So it has been uniquely not a partisan issue at all, but obviously widespread, seen as a serious issue and one that I'm going to continue to focus on heavily. As you ask, what will I be doing over the last 2 months in office? I have approximately 2 months to go here. I will continue to work hard on that 50-state investigation and in Ohio in various cases to try to get the big banks, the national banks, to pay more attention to how they can help us resolve the foreclosure problem and ease this pressure on our housing market, on our economy generally, on the labor market, because people can't move to jobs because they can't sell their houses. There's many widespread consequences of this, and for our communities to have boarded up buildings, teardowns, or vacant properties that are magnets for crime. And I'm quite sure that Mike DeWine will see the importance of that, just as I saw the importance of it.
Okay, we have to take a break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Attorney General Richard Cordray. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News Team.
It's always good to refresh your resume, refresh your skill sets. I'm looking into maybe taking a few extra courses online in order to just beef up my resume.
Bundrum is one of about 5.8 million people around the country who's over 50 and out of work, so he'll want to be as competitive as possible.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Join us Wednesday, November 10th at 6 p.m. with WOSU's Ann Fisher for a discussion about what's hot and what's not in German Village today. It's a German Village town hall meeting, and the event is free and open to the public. For more information, visit WOSU.org. 52 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunny skies today, a high of 66, clear skies tonight, and a low of 38. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Attorney General Richard Cordray. Give us a call if you have a question about the future, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One of the big bones of contention during the campaign was the issue of health care reform at the federal level, and the fact that you did not join the group of attorneys general who are fighting that at the federal level. Mike DeWine has said that he will.
Yes. That was a specific disagreement between the two of us over policy. It was a legitimate difference of opinion. He's part of a group who feels strongly that the new health care reform bill is bad for the country and will be bad for Ohio. I don't necessarily agree with that, but the other issue here, the most immediate issue for the Attorney General is, do you think that law is constitutional or not? Mike DeWine obviously thinks that there's a very good chance that it's unconstitutional. I happen to think that it is very likely to be upheld as constitutional. I had not joined any of those lawsuits. There's many of them pending around the country. He has said that he will. Those lawsuits will go forward, and eventually they'll be decided. And whenever the courts decide, everyone will abide by it one way or the other. The other interesting thing on that front is there's going to be a lot of action now in Congress, it appears, with the Republicans now controlling the House and being committed, many of them, to repeal or significant reform of the health care law. They'll be putting pressure on, they've already said, through the appropriation process. And we'll see how all that plays out. But the difference for the Attorney General's office in Ohio in particular is we had not been part of that lawsuit. We will now join on that lawsuit, I would assume, when Mike takes office. And then it will play itself out around the country in a number of different courtrooms.
Bill, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. And good morning, Richard. I have a question about the practicality of the of your job and the auditor's job in terms of teaching people how to keep good minutes of public meetings. And currently, the auditor does do auditing of various public bodies like school boards, library boards, etc. And they've told the folks at these that once the minutes are prepared by a machine of some sort, and therefore totally accurate, and that's usually what the treasurer, the secretary, or whatever does to create summary minutes that the boards approve, that they can then destroy the more complete record because consistent with their destruction.
Now, what's your question?
Well, I got to explain the background. It won't make any
sense.
Okay. My question is, I've actually been watching some of the collection of the mechanical collection of minutes and the end result in finding that they're actually being changed, yet the auditor and you and the auditor are teaching people how to do this. Why aren't you telling those folks, you know, something else? And so brings my question then is, can these two offices, both of you will be leaving your office now, is it even appropriate for you to start to create a best practice manual or whatever that not only says, that just says what you two folks, based on your experience, would like to see and then spells out exactly what is required by law and what is just a good idea from you folks?
Sure, Bill. In fact, the Attorney General's office, together with the Auditor's office, and we've had good cooperation from Mary Taylor on this, we put out the Yellow Book, sometimes called the Sunshine Book, which summarizes every aspect of Ohio's Sunshine Laws, which covers not only open meetings but also public records, and is the Bible, really, that's used around the state by people to deal with these kinds of issues. We also do training for local officials across the state. They're required to have this training on their obligations to the public, which are significant in Ohio. We never had any disagreements about this over the course of the campaign. It has been a priority for my office. I believe it will be a priority for Senator DeWine's office when he becomes Attorney General. We did have occasional disagreements on some specific issues that will continue to be worked through by me and then eventually by him. But everybody involved here from the Attorney General's office and the Attorney General's race, I think, has a very strong commitment to public records in Ohio and the principle that it is the public, after all, to whom the records belong, and they're entitled to know about their government in order to be able to evaluate and pass judgment on their public officials, which ultimately is their role to do.
Thanks, Bill, for your call. I appreciate it. Governor Kasich has said that he wants, Governor-elect Kasich has said that he wants to use the funds earmarked for high-speed rail development in Ohio. He wants those to be repurposed, and he wants the governor to cease and desist spending that money on the rail-related studies that are underway. The governor, Strickland, has indicated that the state's going to move forward with the plan as long as he's in office. Can an incoming governor change the course before he's in office like that, or is it just completely ask and be declined?
Well, I think you've got policy disagreements there. Those don't really fall in the realm of the Ohio Attorney General's office to assess those. Certainly, under our Constitution, the governor Governor Strickland remains the governor until January 10th. He can set the direction of the state. The new governor coming in is free to indicate the direction he's going to set for the state after starting on January 10th. And then whether it makes sense for people to stand down on some things they're doing in the meantime or not, I think it's up to them to decide. It's not for me to say. What I'll be focused on is continuing to do my job for two more months and take into account any comments, suggestions, ideas that I get from Mike DeWine in the meantime about where he's planning to go. I certainly don't want to waste effort on things that are not going to be continued. But we want to continue to put in effort on things that are important to the state. And we'll have a lot of discussions back and forth, I believe, on how to handle those things. But the bottom line is people have a term of office. They serve that term. New people come in, and then they have their term to serve. And that's essentially how it works.
614-292-8513. And Hasid, you're on the air.
Thank you. First of all, we would like to thank you for Attorney General for bringing the action on the foreclosures. But our question is, do you plan to bring any new action against these companies that sell these frivolous and false living trust kits with annuity contracts attached to them, defrauding citizens of the state of Ohio? They've been doing this for quite some time, and it appears that there's not a private cause of action allowing the citizens to bring an action in the state court. It must be brought by the Attorney General. And these companies are making citizens in Ohio go to other states to settle and further compounding the fraud. So
okay,
my question, will you initiate an action against these companies before you leave office?
What I'll say is our consumer protection section has numerous investigations ongoing at any given time. I mean, we're talking dozens of investigations at any given time, some of which ripen into lawsuits. Obviously, the closer we get to January 10th, the more we want to consult, probably with my successor. Do you bring a lawsuit right as you're going out of office if, in fact, they're not going to plan to continue that lawsuit? Those are things we'll have to keep in mind. If you have information, Hasid, about living trust fraud that's being committed in Ohio, please bring it to the Ohio Attorney General's office. You can contact us at 1-800-282-0515 or on our website at ohioattorneygeneral.gov. We tend to be highly responsive to the information that's brought to us by individuals and consumers in Ohio. When we get multiple complaints about something, that's a more serious problem for us, and we will be more likely to bring a lawsuit if I'm just hearing from you on this show but not getting anything that documents any kind of problems, then we're likely to put our resources elsewhere. So bring us whatever you have. We will take a look at it, and if it justifies a lawsuit, I may bring it before I leave office, or my successor may bring it after he takes office.
Thanks, Hasid, for your question. We have an email from Michelle. The focus I was most impressed by in Mr. Cordray's time as Attorney General was his work with the Ohio Trafficking in Persons Study Commission. Is this an issue he will continue to address in a future career?
I will say two things. Number one, I did create the Commission on Human Trafficking in Ohio. It was an issue I did not know much about when I took office. It's an issue I have learned a great deal about and become very passionate about during my 2 years here. I think we've done a lot of good work on human trafficking. Part of that work is to culminate in a change in Ohio law so that we will create a new freestanding felony offense of human trafficking. There's a lot of bipartisan momentum for that. We don't yet know whether there's going to be a lame duck session of the legislature. If there is, we were very hopeful that would be enacted before the end of this calendar year. If not, I have great confidence it will go forward in the next General Assembly and be passed. I would hope that the commission will continue under my successor, Mr. DeWine. I believe it will because, again, it's one of the serious problems facing our community, and I believe that he will be just as concerned about the serious problems facing our community as I have been, and I will be advocating as we have our transition meetings that this is one of the issues that was new to me that I took up and got started, and that they would be well advised to continue. But ultimately, that'll be their judgment.
There's still, you know, several weeks left in your term. Just today, I think it was that you joined the attorneys general of 10 other states in a settlement with the owners of U.S. Fidelis, formerly the nation's largest dealer for vehicle service contracts. You just did this. You just got involved in this. Could this be an ongoing thing all the way up to the end of your term?
Oh, I think it certainly will be. And the beautiful thing about the Ohio Attorney General's office And unfortunately, the people there have now suffered transitions of four different, they will have suffered four different attorneys general in 4 years, which is hard on people. But people who have worked in that office on both sides of the aisle over the years, and many of them now out in private practice teaching any variety of things, have great pride in the office. And the work of the office continues from one attorney general to another. Much of the work is largely unchanged from one attorney general to another. Some of the priorities do change. Some of the emphases do change. But there are many ongoing investigations that, although they were initiated under Rich Cordray, they will ripen under Mike DeWine. And my guess is they will not be handled differently from him than they were from me, because the work itself justifies itself. And the need and the violations of law that people are committing out there are of the same amount of seriousness and concern to any attorney general. And that's true going back through the years. We've had great attorneys general on both sides of the aisle. And when one has given way to another, the work has pretty much continued seamless in many respects, although some priorities do change. And my expectation is the kind of thing you're talking about, Anne, consumer investigations, that will be pretty seamless, would be my guess.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Attorney General Richard Cordray. Give us a call if you want to know about what's going to happen in the future, or if you have any questions for him. We welcome your questions and comments. What are you worried about that won't get done, that will fall by the wayside?
Well, and I think the people I work with in my office can tell you that I worry about just about everything, and I'm very hands-on, and I do think that there are some significant problems that we're trying to address that are not easy problems to address. I mean, you know, if we could have solved them during my tenure, we would have. We've made progress on some of them. Some of them are issues being addressed by multiple states. Some of them are issues being addressed by the states and federal officials at the same time. Some of them are problems that continue to elude us. For example, getting this economy working again, getting the foreclosure numbers down. We can just continue to work on those, but we have not by any means resolved them. So there's a lot I worry about. I worry about the people in the office. I worry about them having the opportunity to do their best work. I have tried to create that framework during my time there. I'm sure that the people who succeed my top team will be doing the same. I worry about our state. I worry about the future of this country, just as I think most people do at some level. And I think that it's something that always commands our attention, because if we're digging in and helping to push that future in a better direction, it will go in a better direction. I strongly feel that. I think that's what's drawn me to public service for many, many years, and continues to do so despite the ups and downs of particular elections.
A longtime whipping boy in the Attorney General's office has been the crime lab, and it's popped up in every election that I can remember over the last couple decades. Mike DeWine criticized your handling in the 2 years that you had control of it, of the state's crime lab. He said that operations there, especially as they regarded DNA testing and that sort of thing, were way behind, and the backlogs were indefensible. You've said that they actually improved over your 2 years in office. Can you be more specific about that?
Sure. And look, once the election comes and goes, I don't think it's particularly useful of the candidates to continue to try to argue back and forth about the points they did argue about during the campaign. So I'm not here to do that. I do think, though, that the crime lab in the Attorney General's office, the three crime labs in the state, are making tremendous progress. I think they made tremendous progress during my tenure. One of the most significant changes that occurred was that the DNA labs, which is the most specialized, most powerful evidence analysis that we now do, made a lot of progress because we introduced robotics, which is a new technique, more of an assembly line type technique that allowed us to handle more pieces of evidence faster. And that did bring down the backlogs. There was no denying that, and Mike DeWine acknowledged that on a number of occasions. His view was that we wanted even faster progress. And that became the base of a criticism in the campaign. I actually think that criticism was far off the mark, and most people who examined it agreed with that. I think that as he takes office, he will see that the people in the crime labs work hard. They do at least their share of work compared to other crime labs in the state and around the country. They do it at a very high level, and I think the process improvements we have made will continue to reduce the backlogs and allow us, as we have started to do in the last 6 to 9 months, to do some new things there. We're now taking DNA analysis on evidence from property crimes, which the Attorney General's office never did before because they were too backlogged to handle that. We are working toward, and I would hope that they will continue developing a new protocol on the testing of sexual assault kits. Again, going to produce a volume of work that the Attorney General's office could not have handled before, but with robotics in the DNA lab, we now can. We've cracked a number of cold cases over my time there. They will continue to do that in the future, I'm sure. Our scientists have the great confidence that they will solve every case eventually, give them enough time, give them enough improvements in technology. But I do think that the criticism of the crime lab, maybe they were somewhat effective in the campaign, very hard to know. But I think that they were a bum rap for the people who worked there, and I think for the progress that we made. But it would be my expectation Mike DeWine will continue to make progress, as I have done. A lot of it will probably be on the same trajectory, and the crime labs will continue to operate well for the state of Ohio. But in future years, there'll probably be further criticism because one of the dynamics is our services are free to local law enforcement around the state. Other crime labs typically charge a fee for their services, so there's always more demand that slides our way based on sheer economics, especially as local law enforcement departments are now strapped with budget cuts and the like. But I think that we did well during my 2 years there. Whether that was fairly reflected in the campaign or not is for other people to judge, and I think that the crime lab and VCI in generally are on track to continue to do well under Mike DeWine.
You mentioned budget cuts, and there's a big whopping budget cut coming up. Everyone knows that, in the neighborhood of $8 billion. Yeah. What are your recommendations for where the cuts would come from in the Attorney General's office?
Well, I would assume that the next administration will see things very much as we did, which is you have to try to make do with less. You have to prioritize. I mean, we absorbed, I think it was either 14 or 18% of budget cuts reduction in our general revenue funding from the 2 years before I came in to the 2 years that I operated, and we made do. Law enforcement will, and I think always will, be a priority. I think that, you continue to stretch your lawyers to try to get more work out of them as you go, and sometimes probably some of the lower priorities end up left undone, which is unfortunate, but that's the nature of a government office in a time of tight resources. We do have access to some other funds, some federal grants, some collection funds that we make that help us make up some of the difference. But it's a tough job managing government offices in times of tight revenues. And it looks like we're going to continue to be in tight revenues going forward. But let me say two things about that. The one is, on a one-time basis, the state faces a very significant budget hole of what may be $8 billion. It may be less than that. We'll see when the estimates come in after the turn of the year. That's going to be a wrench to try to deal with that. On an ongoing basis, in terms of revenues, the revenues over the past 6 to 9 months have actually exceeded estimates. Now, the estimates are much lower, and we have to fix the one-time hole and get the budget adjusted going forward. But it's not like we're continuing to slide in terms of revenues. We're holding pretty steady, maybe even upticking a little bit. So if we can get the $8 billion hole resolved, then I think going forward there's no reason to think that it's going to get worse and worse and worse unless we slide back into recession, which I think is becoming less likely by the day.
Time for one more question. And, Michael, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi,
yes,
Michael.
Good morning. How are you? Mr. Attorney General, I was just wondering what your future plans might be down the road and what you think the future of the Ohio Democratic Party will be in light of the recent election.
Well, for my future plans, Mike, I don't know at this point. Frankly, we're a week from the election itself. I don't want to jump and hop around and make real quick decisions, so I'm not going to do that. In terms of the Democratic Party, both the Democratic and Republican parties have been through tough election cycles within the very immediate past here. In each case, you regroup, you bounce back, you look and see what you did that didn't work. You try to do better the next time, and you recognize that the people of the state of Ohio have made it very clear over the years that they like balance in their government. They want the two parties to compete with each other. When one is not doing well, they're very happy to turn to the other. It's a very open-minded electorate here. This time they have turned to the Republicans pretty hard in the 2010 election, and in the future, depending on how they perform and what we have to offer, people will be receptive again to considering the other side, and I have confidence in that, and we've seen that before. I can't remember if there was a third part to your question, but as for me, unclear at this point, but there will be lots of alternatives. And as for the state, we need to continue to present an alternative to what will now be the governing philosophy for the next few years, and monitor carefully what's going on, be responsible critics of what's going on, but don't criticize just for criticism's sake. Criticize for, in the sense of offering alternatives that would be better for the state for people to consider. And that, I think, is always a worthwhile thing in any democratic system.
Thank you, Michael. You're not ruling out a run for public office in the future, though.
I have been through numerous election losses over the years, Ann, and getting hit on the head has never caused me not to get up again, and I don't think it will here. So I firmly believe I will be running for public office again in the future. What it is and when is, again, premature to say a week after the last election, but I have a passion for public service. I've been persistent in the pursuit of public service. I'm sure that will continue. Absolutely sure.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Attorney General Richard Cordray.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this break. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Join WOSU Public Media and The Refectory for our first-ever Chefs in the City wine tasting, Friday, November 19th at 5:30 p.m. Guests will sample hand-selected wines and taste exclusive creations by Chef Richard Blondon. You'll also be part of a special WOSU TV production on how food and wine are paired. A limited number of tickets are on sale now at wosu.org/chefs or by calling 614-688-3777.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with a discussion of writing a memoir, the most popular and expressive literary form of our time. Joining us will be author and teacher Thomas Larson, along with a World War II veteran who has recently written his own memoir. That discussion begins at 11 on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
53 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 66. Clear skies tonight, a low of 38 degrees. Another beautiful day tomorrow, sunny skies, a high of 67. And Wednesday night, clear skies, a low of 40 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio Governor-elect John Kasich is wasting no time digging into the state's budget mess. But one issue that is not on the Kasich agenda is the 3C passenger rail initiative, the plan to connect Columbus, Cleveland, and Cincinnati and Dayton by train using $400 million in federal dollars is being stopped in its tracks.
That train is dead. I said it during the campaign. It is dead. We are not going to have it.
Joining me to discuss the future of that $400 million and what happens next with the 3C rail plan is Cincinnati Inquirer Columbus Bureau reporter John Craig. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, hi, Ann.
So Ohio, Wisconsin, looks like they're putting the kibosh on the high-speed passenger rail.
Yeah, New York already wants our money.
New York already wants it. Tell us what the John Kasich sent letters to President Obama. He sent a letter to Governor Strickland. What is he asking them?
He wants them to just stop spending money, period. We've already started some ridership and fare studies. One of them was, I think, with Amtrak. And the money's already in hand. Governor Strickland feels it still should be studied, regardless of whether what Governor-elect Kasich thinks.
If those studies are underway, and Governor-elect Kasich did refer to contractual issues, if they're already underway, are we losing? Is there any advantage to just stopping them now, or any would be the advantage to continuing them?
Well, two issues. One is they may have already obligated money out to companies like Parson Brinckerhoff or other contractors. And then the second issue is if the money's spent, it's not like you can give that back to the feds. So if they've spent $25 million or $50 million and the controlling board already okayed it, then that's money out the door as far as Strickland's concerned.
And John Kasich asked the president to let Ohio spend the money on other things, more, as he put it, more pressing infrastructure
right.
issues?
Well, one issue that could fly, especially with a Republican Congress and a Republican legislature, is Ohio is so strong in freight business, and we already do need to improve the freight lines for the passenger rail. They're starting to build some consensus between Kasich and the legislature to lobby to change the law at the federal level, whether someone like Boehner would help them out to spend it all on freight so they don't have to oblige. I think it's 20 years you're obligated to commit to passenger rail if you take this money.
Now, New York said they'll take the money. They'd be happy to have
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Governor-elect Cuomo, Mario's son, said we'll take your money and no strings attached. And what's interesting to me is our readers who – you know, very much support Kasich down the Cincinnati area, are now scratching their heads like they don't want to give the money to another state. So, I mean, as a reporter, I enjoy the, you know, kind of the reader turmoil going on the websites.
What are they saying?
Well, it went from like 700 comments last week, you know, go Kasich, to today and yesterday. Now that they see the money might not come to Ohio, there's just a lot more animated debate going on whether we're regressive or progressive and what we're doing.
What is the sense out there that if Ohio foregoes this opportunity now, is that pretty much it? I mean, can the state ever amass the capital to start a project like this again?
Well, you know, as you know, the federal money's probably already, you know, we're way over obliged, and unless they approve another federal bill, that money's not going to come. One dilemma among the Republican-led Senate and House, you know, House coming up, is whether the state would now have this obligation of new tax money to keep it running once mm-hmm. once we set it up. So that's part of their dilemma. And then the other debate going on is whether it's even going to run fast enough or have enough riders. So that one is the one that's the part that's more unknown to everybody.
And that's part of what they're trying to study.
Yeah, that's what they're studying now. But I mean, Kasich's actually, this is one of the topics he's been most consistent on. He's never mm-hmm. wanted the rail. He says it's going to be too slow. Nobody's going to ride it. You know, we already have a lot of money going into roads and other infrastructure.
But other states are doing it.
Yeah, though, you know, I haven't studied it a whole lot in other states, but, you know, California already has a much more advanced rail system. Mm-hmm. The systems that go across the north, you know, the northern part of our country, east to west, are a lot more developed. So this is kind of this has been a line that's been idle 30 years, so it is. It is a fairly major undertaking to get it going again between Cleveland and Cincinnati.
I don't know if you've been paying much attention, but in Dayton, were already planning a lot of development around where the rail would have gone through the Dayton area.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And there, that's all.
Well, what's interesting, too, Cincinnati, too, has been, we're talking about a streetcar down there, and there's different hubs, and that... Columbus, even too, around Rickenbacker Air Base, they want to get a, like, intermodal area going. There is other development that would spur off of it, and one of the snags, unfortunately, is where the stops would be. If you stop in Sharonville, north of Cincinnati, and dump everyone off there, they'd be taking a cab anyway. So there's a lot of debate over, like, you know, where they're placed, where the stops are placed.
But I guess it's all a moot point at this juncture.
Yeah, and though Kasich, I mean, he is he is favored, like the intermodal. He's favored smaller, you know, projects through like North Baltimore. You know what? I guess I wouldn't say it's dead, because if Strickland wants to spend however $100 million before Kasich comes in on January 10th, then who knows
what he might dig up.
Or what they might begin, I don't know. Okay. How upset is he over the election? Who knows?
it's a lame duck phase of the process. And another issue that's popped up is Governor-elect Kasich has asked the Senate, the Ohio Senate, not to confirm Governor Strickland's nominees for the Casino Commission, which has put it pretty much in a standstill mode. During this transition,
what's the upshot of that? Interesting about that is the commission is four members of the majority party and three members of the minority, and I thought Strickland was fairly strategic to pick a Republican, you know, well liked Republican, Rocky Sexton,
right,
as chairman. And even Rocky joked yesterday the rumors of my death quoting Mark Twain are exaggerated, and though they're not going to meet again, they could start hiring staff. Kasich can't appoint anybody legally until the 10th. But as you know, the Republicans dig their heels in the Senate, and they probably will not. They probably will reject at least three or four of Strickland's appointees, is my guess. But it's just another thing that's going to be in a holding pattern for 2 months.
There was also the issue of the Livestock Care Advisory Board or Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to were supposed to, during this period, follow through on some promises made last summer.
Rules governing, the care of animals.
Particularly exotic animal, exotic pets, the caging issue for livestock, and those kinds of things. I mean, just in general, what do you expect during a lame duck period like this? I don't recall so much conflict in the past,
yeah,
but maybe I've just blocked it out.
Well, part of it is this is the first governor, I think, since Gilligan, who was not reelected midterm.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't been in a situation with somebody leaving after one term in a while. I think the political environment's definitely more tumultuous, but you're right. We're in it. It is an interesting time because Strickland can continue to appoint people to the 300 boards and commissions for the next month or two, and Kasich will have to keep saying whether he wants people or not, but there's no binding commitment. We're in this time when there's pardons in the prison and the last contracts. I've heard the unions who are very supportive of Strickland have been promised a lot of work on the way out here. So there's a lot to keep track of.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is John Craig. He's a reporter in the Cincinnati Enquirer's Columbus Bureau. If you have a question about this lame duck phase that we're entering now with the outgoing governor after a midterm election, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Getting back to the rail issue, how far along were the studies?
I know one study was, it may almost be a year old now, of ridership. That was Amtrak. A new study, controlling board, I'm losing sense of time because of the campaign, but it was probably last spring when they narrowly approved another contract, and that was a $25 or $50 billion contract. Those probably won't go to waste, like ODOT saying that these studies of lines and how to improve them can be used for freight, and a lot of the money, probably at least a fifth of the money, was going to be used to improve existing freight lines. So, you know, some of it isn't to waste. It's just that Congress has put strings on how to spend anything else after that, unless it's tied to passenger use.
He wrote the letter to President Obama.
Right, and to the governor.
And to the governor. Any response from the president?
I haven't heard any yet, but I think he just sent that one.
Yesterday,
right.
And from the governor?
Nothing yet that I've heard of, but they verbally, they've been a lot more aggressive than I even expected on saying, you know, essentially too bad, we're going to keep moving ahead. So that, you know, that's where this gridlock and conflict is ramping up.
We have an email from Michael, or I'm sorry, it's a message from Michael on Facebook. Writes, I totally agree with Kasich on the train. Let's get real and put this money into infrastructure that is truly needed, like an above-ground metro link connecting north and south ends of OSU campus, short north to Arena and Arena to Kosai and German Village. Add a parking garage to each metro station and run the majority of the line along the Scioto. Ridiculous potential for jobs, growth, and revenue. But, John, Craig, they can't use the money for those things.
Right. That's part of the problem is there was limited money from the feds on local projects, and you would have had to apply for it already. This is committed to the long, you know, the longer rail, passenger rail routes, and I can't remember offhand, but I think only 6 or 10 states got it. So there were plenty of other states that got denied that would take it now if we gave it up.
Is there anything else that Governor-elect Kasich is expected to ask for during this period between now and the end of Governor Strickland's term?
Great question. I think appointees could be one. You know, if Strickland keeps appointing people, the other one is
the Supreme Court appointment.
The Supreme Court appointment definitely. Which I think, though, I'm almost certain Strickland has to do it time frame before the end of the year. So I don't know if that's reversible. The other one is the next two-year budget starts very soon, so how much input they get to have, you know, in the transition period on shaping that is, you know, would help Kasich out. The more time he has to shape that early than late.
Well, he has until March because he's an incoming governor.
I think.
Right, a new governor. All right. Well, John Craig of the Cincinnati Inquirer, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
You bet. That's all the time we have for All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for joining us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.